It's time for our monthly media segment, Signals and Noise. One thing we've noticed about running a monthly media segment in our time is the topics come fast and furious. We can try to lock up the topics a few days in advance, but the fire hose of news frequently shuffles our deck right up to the last minute. That's kind of a mixed metaphor, fire hoses and decks. I just realized that. But that's okay. There's always plenty to talk about. We do define media very broadly, taking in items about the media themselves and content delivered over a broad range of media, from virtual reality to books. And we have our usual guest, Andrew Gay, from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. Andrew, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And subbing for Precious Yamaguchi, who had other commitments today, Chris Lucas from the Communications Department. Chris, good to have you back here as well.
Thanks, Jeff.
Let's start off talking about the address from the Oval Office by the president on Tuesday night this week, talking about what he has yet to declare a national emergency at the southern border in defense of keeping the government closed until he gets the money for the wall. There's a lot of discussion within the media about even airing this speech.
Yeah, I mean, so there's precedence for not airing it, for instance. You know, there is President Obama gave an Oval Office address a few years ago back about immigration, and it was deemed too political by the network, so they didn't air it. There was a release, I think, by NBC News or something that said, you know, there's no consistent rule. For instance, under President Bush, we did air one, and then under President Obama, we didn't. And someone said, well, yeah, the rule seems to be it's Republican presidents get two and the Democrats don't. I think the real controversy over it, too, is that obviously I think everyone who's been watching the current president knew that this was not going to be a completely factual address, right? That there were going to be a lot of issues being brought up on a major platform. And, you know, should the media reward that? And then there's a big call for, all right, well, let's at least have like live fact checking or something like that, which I don't think anyone actually did live fact checking. So I think that it was, you know, I kind of questioned the decision myself. I think, especially after the address came out, I didn't watch it. I did read it. It wasn't a very newsy address. It really didn't break important a news announcement. I think he was kind of teasing that with this whole emergency thing. Mm-hmm. But it was pretty blatantly political. And then he went right back the next day to blasting the news organization. So it didn't really seem like they earned any goodwill from the president by airing the address.
And so there was, you know, I ran a piece briefly on our website the other day about the ethical calculus behind NPR's decision to air a presidential speech, which we carried. But apparently a lot of tussling in newsrooms about, I don't know, is this the right thing to do or not?
You know, I really feel some empathy for people on the news side, you know, because especially in a news organization, there's this legacy of the public interest, you know, serving the public interest. And so anytime a political leader speaks on something that feels like, you know, there is an ongoing debate and conversation about the border, and especially in this moment where we're in the middle of this shutdown, which is, you know, turning into a genuine crisis of some sort, I think that seemed to enter into the calculation of the news rooms that, you know, isn't just about the politics of what Trump is saying, but we are in a moment where there's an issue that needs to be resolved. So
absent the shutdown, perhaps, it might have been a different decision.
I think so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's talk, too, about the Democratic response, because that has generated a lot more internet activity since the time, all in comic kinds of ways, because the shot of a very stoic-looking Chuck Schumer, the Senate Minority Leader, and Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, side by side, giving their version of the events there, has just engendered everything from paste-ons of American Gothic heads to things
that
like
70s show. I saw one.
I did see that too with Red and his wife. Yeah, and then the other one, like we're not angry, we're just disappointed.
Right,
a real
right.
parental sort of angle on
exactly.
this.
Yeah, I thought I think that's going to be one of those clips that gets shown in a lot of public speaking classes and media classes for a long time about stagecraft, right?
Uh-huh. Like look at your co-anchor. I saw that one a lot. Yeah,
there's one that said like Schumer, Nancy, I got all the flags, and she's like, great. How many podiums did you get? but it was a great fun meme and a lot of really funny ones out there. I think the other viral moment was I just lost my train of thought. There's another thing that Trump had said something that was really funny, but I lost my train of thought entirely.
Well, I think it was pretty clear that, you know, whatever else is going on, that the White House has won the videography wars. You know, the videographers seem to be better than because that was a terrible shot they set up on the Democrats
Really bad.
Yeah, very, very small podium. Yeah, that was a good joke there. But yeah, so it's people having their fun with that. But that is what goes on in our time. We're discussing lots of events in the media landscape for this month in our Signals and Noise segment. Andrew Gay is back. Chris Lucas is in this month. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Before we depart the blatantly political, we have to talk about the now famous video of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, brand new member of the House of Representatives, dancing. And I think this was put out there for one purpose and ended up serving quite another.
You know, I think to me this whole if you could call it a controversy, this whole conversation was summed up in a tweet that was responding to both that and the Elizabeth Warren announcement. Mm-hmm. The Elizabeth Warren announcing for president or that, you know, exploratory committee was responded with a lot of articles about, oh, is she likable enough? She's too serious. And then right after that was this video of the congresswoman dancing, saying, oh, look how frivolous she is. And this tweet basically said, like, you know, y'all, your misogyny is not very veiled here. You know, this is clearly about women can never get it right. There's this side of, oh, you can't be too fun, you can't be too serious. You know, I thought it was pretty hilarious that this was, that people thought that a video of a woman dancing in college is going to be somehow shocking. especially it's like the Breakfast Club meme. I mean, mm-hmm.
Certainly backfired, right? It was already a meme. It was, you know, something that a lot of people recognized immediately, but clearly the folks who began to spread it around did not. A lot of folks are having some sport with the right-wing media for making this an issue. But I do see some genuine hazard, I guess, for Ocasio-Cortez, because I think of like the example of Hillary Clinton, you know, and when she first emerged as a public figure in the early 90s with Bill Clinton. There are all these sort of trivial sounding stories about her. I remember sort of Tammy Wynette and Stand By Your Man.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'm not just standing here baking cookies.
Rumors about her sexuality, like all kinds of bizarre stuff, a lot of it frivolous and trivial. But it begins to build a narrative, right? And then eventually something can happen, which maybe, you know, there is a mistake on the part of a young congressperson, which is entirely likely, or something embarrassing comes out. And there's kind of there's a ready narrative to then build around this
person. Oh, right. Person. And the video emerges again, just with different captions.
Yeah. So that's what I would worry about with, you know, and I, you know, I do, it's sort of the politics of the day. This is sort of these are the strategies, right, that we see.
Yeah, Ben Shapiro, who's a kind of a popular conservative commentator, tweets a lot. You know, he had posted a tweet saying, like, you know, we're not obsessed. I don't know why you all think we're obsessed with Ocasio-Cortez. Uh-huh. We just don't like her ideas. And a response from someone on Twitter was, you've tweeted about her 21 times since 3 p.m. Thursday, right? And so there, I have really observed that, especially among male conservative commentators, they have chosen her as a target, and they are piling every little thing. And obviously, she makes mistakes. I mean, she's
well,
a, and,
but
she's
to Chris's point, I mean, you're a very young Congress member. They really haven't done anything yet in Congress. They're not doing much at the moment because the government's not open. That's sort of the main thing in front of them.
Which Whoopi Goldberg blasted her about. And that was another little news item there. Whoopi on The View said, just sit down, stop talking to the press, just sit down and get some stuff done first.
Wow. Okay. Coming from all sides.
Yeah, exactly.
This is our monthly examination of the media landscape, as best as we could do it in 22 minutes, with Andrew Gay and Chris Lucas from the Communications Faculty at Southern Oregon University. You are welcome to join the conversation at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Golden Globes. This was supposed to be the night for A Star Is Born. And it ended up a little bit differently, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Got pretty overshadowed there.
Mm-hmm. And so what are your takes?
I was surprised. You know, I thought Star, you know, Star is Born would take it away, because I thought that's really the kind of movie that the Globes often goes for. It's, you know, very middle of the road in a lot of ways, star making. And, you know, but the Globes always surprises. You know, it's such a small pool of voters.
Because it is the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
And so they're very cagey about who actually belongs to that organization, but we know it's less than 100 people.
Whoa.
And
That's a lot of power.
So each person is a significant block.
Yes, yeah. Notorious. And with those five nominees, then just a couple of votes either way, right, could swing it. Notoriously vulnerable to charges of corruption in various ways, and being susceptible to whining and dining by stars. So there's a lot of backstory to these winners that I always, there's a critic I follow named Matt Singer, who wrote, the Globes is a terrible award show, but a terrific party.
Which has often been the complaint. It's been seen as a bit of a boozy love fest or joke fest, sometimes with lots of profanity. And I did hear some comment from somewhere out there that this was really an effort to try to bring it a little more down into a more stable, sober kind of affair.
I didn't actually watch the show. I've seen clips and stuff afterwards. I had family in town at the time. I heard it was kind of just generally a little more somber and sleepy than some of the past shows have been. I know that there's been some interesting fallout because of Green Book, which is, a conversation around, again, sort of another sort of white savior film. Mm-hmm. And then some interesting controversies coming out with a screenwriter who has just discovered an old tweet that's gone re-viral, in which he agreed with Donald Trump that thousands of Muslims were cheering on 9/11. And so now there's this whole new conversation about who are these people, and they came up to accept their award, and there's no people of color accepting their award, and there's this sort of question of why are all these white people getting prizes for the story about a black artist, and so that was kind of an interesting fallout that I noticed.
It was nominated next to Black Klansman, mm-hmm. Which is sort of Spike Lee's return mm-hmm. to form in a lot of ways.
It's the second time Spike Lee's lost an award to Driving Miss Daisy.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's kind of added to the problematic. People were also surprised Bohemian Rhapsody would walk away with the other big prize, and because that was a movie that was reviewed pretty terribly by mm-hmm. most of your mainstream critics.
But everybody I know who has seen it. I mean, maybe I'm just reading my fake news on
Facebook. It's done amazing box office, right? Mm-hmm. It's up to $200 million US and something like $800 million around the world. So this is a hugely successful film, clearly very much hits all the buttons that we love in sort of musical biopics and is entertaining and a great kind of rags to riches story. It's maybe the real A Star Is Born of the year. The Hollywood Foreign Press often goes for those kinds of movies, and their function as an organization, kind of coming out of World War II, was to promote Hollywood in a most kind of populist sense. Mm-hmm. So, it kind of makes sense to me that a film like Bohemian Rhapsody would end up on top.
My favorite viral moment, though, is was Emma Stone shouting out, "I'm sorry,"
because she played an Asian
part. Right. Sandra Oh had said something about, this is the second or third time that Asian cast she's referencing Crazy Rich Asians, and said there's also Aloha, and everyone laughed, and Emma Stone shouts from the back of the room, "I'm sorry." She was cast as a Asian character. So
I read about that. Signals and Noise on the Jefferson Exchange. You're welcome to join us at 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org, with Andrew Gay and Chris Lucas from the communications faculty at SOU. All right, so talking about the Golden Globes, of course, leads us straight to the Oscars, and I just read, was it yesterday, that Kevin Hart's "Will He Come Back, Won't He" is a firm
it's
"Won't
over,
He" now.
Yes. Yeah.
So he will not be hosting the Oscars. At this point, they don't know who's hosting the Oscars, is it right?
Yeah, I've heard there's even discussion of not having a host, of just kind of having the the rotating presenters. I don't know.
Variety reported that yesterday, that they're planning on going without a host unless by some miracle a very big name comes forward, which seems unlikely because this is like the least. the kind of job that wins admirers in Hollywood, it's always ends up leading to trouble and it's thankless.
I mean, it's kind of amazing that the Oscars can't get a host.
Truly, yeah.
If you look, if you look back, it's there's a string of people who do it and they don't do it again, you have a few folks like Billy Crystal, right, who did mm-hmm. it for years in the 90s, and Jimmy Carson did it, right, for several years in the 80s.
Oh, Johnny Carson for a long time.
Johnny Carson, right. And so But yeah, otherwise, you know, clearly, and if we were to believe Jimmy Kimmel, it doesn't pay that well. So I guess maybe it just doesn't add up.
Which raises, I guess, a general question about the value of awards shows. I mean, obviously, if for example, with the Golden Globes, where, you know, well, it really, this is Lady Gaga's year. This is the year for A Star Is Born. And it ends up being Bohemian Rhapsody, which the critics didn't like, but it's more of a populist thing. I mean, what really are the awards shows trying to do other than showcase their industry? And I understand on that basis, Hollywood wants something out there in front of the public with a chance for a large viewing audience. But if they have this problem every year where they've been complaining since the Ten Commandments themselves, not the movie, the actual delivery of the Ten Commandments, that the show is too long.
And I feel like the ratings have been going down pretty consistently too, haven't they? I mean, yeah. So yeah, I think there's a real question of sort of what the, I mean, I know among my friends, the filmy people, like we're never happy. We're always like, that's the, you know, so-and-so got robbed and that was the wrong film. I have sort of an annual game with friends that I went to film school with where we all debate back again who should have won all the years. Where we start going through each year and decide who really should have won. Because there's some funny films out there that won Best Picture that like are totally forgotten now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, Goodfellas didn't win. Mm-hmm. Dancing with Wolves.
The ratings are down, but it's still one of the biggest nights on television, right? You know, in this kind of this day where we have so much fragmentation in the media ecosystem, to gain an audience, which I think last year was around 27 million.
Which is, it's not Super Bowl numbers, but it's a big number.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a big number these days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it varies. Some years have been a little bit more. The general trend has been down, but it's still a lot of people. So to kind of think the answer to the bigger question, one reason we still have it is it's a big televisual event and it makes money.
And it can definitely have an impact. I mean, for instance, when Moonlight won, right? That Moonlight was still kind of a sleepy little film. Mm-hmm. And that certainly had an impact for that film, you know, getting in front of more people when it beat La La Land.
And I can tell you, as a guy who used to have to slot local promotions into the Oscars program, you want to get a few good promos in there. It's also a night you can sell a lot to the advertisers. Mm. So, yeah, big night for the local TV stations as well. Let's move on to the story about Susan Zirinsky getting hired at CBS. Who wants to take that one?
I like
Well, it's just sort of it's a newsworthy event, even though it's largely out of sight. We don't kind of get to peer inside these big news organizations very often. But Zirinsky is she's a longtime CBS reporter and producer. She's worked for 48 Hours for years, and she is now the first female president of that news organization, which is one of the, you know, it's a storied news operation. And she is actually herself a bit of a legendary figure and revered within CBS. And perhaps, I don't know how true this is, but the story about her is that she is the character that Holly Hunter plays in broadcast news is based on Susan Zirinsky. Like, she's this and sort of very intense, somewhat neurotic, but extremely productive, talented journalist. You know, people have kept an eye on her for years.
But that's interesting that she is the first female president of CBS News.
Right. And of course, CBS has had a rough couple of years.
With rotating anchors at the evening news right. And, of course, Charlie Rose having to get dumped
exactly.
from morning news.
So they got sort of tangled up in some Me Too moments and some of their stars took off, including some of their executives. So that's what led to
this. Yeah, Les Moonves, of course, at the top of the food chain.
Right. So clearly there's a lot of concern about a larger culture, right, within that organization. And even in their flagship news program, 60 Minutes, which is, you know, this is sort of had an unimpeachable reputation for decades, even within that organization, especially in the executive offices, some people ended up leaving because of accusations. So to have a woman end up at the top and be able to hopefully change that culture is getting a lot of attention. Mm.
Yeah, and I think, of course, it's important to remember that just because a woman is at the top doesn't mean that the culture will change. And I think that's the thing we have to watch out, too, is I think a lot of times people think, oh, a woman's going to be in charge now. This, you know, this is so symbolic. But, you know, women are also capable of overseeing organizations that have this sort of rampant, sexual harassment going on. And so I think it's really important that we watch this closely and still expect to see real results.
I don't know if I'd want to work for the character that Holly Hunter plays in broadcast news, actually. Right?
Good at her job. Good at her job, yeah. So let's we got about, 2 minutes plus. Why don't we go right to the pick threes here? So each of you can talk about three things that have riveted your interest and that you're putting out there for the folks to consider.
I'll let Chris go first.
Okay. One of my pick threes actually got an award at the Golden Globes, the show Killing Eve. which is it's on BBC America, so mm-hmm. maybe not easy to reach for everybody.
That's the Sandra Oh show, right?
This is Sandra Oh. She mm-hmm. was the host of The Globes, and she plays a an operative in MI5, right? That's the British.
Well, it's MI5 and MI6.
Right. Okay,
basically FBI, CIA.
One of
for
those,
us, yeah.
And she's chasing a serial assassin who is. Played by a woman, and they get in this kind of interesting psychological relationship. Really stylish, interesting show. Mm-hmm. My second is very different. It's called Waking Dream, and it's a 6-part short documentary series that was funded by Independent Lens, which is part of PBS. Mm-hmm. And it's about, it follows 6 young people who were sort of protected under DACA, the Deferred Action mm-hmm. for Childhood Arrivals that Obama put in place. So it sort of follows them and sort of explores how being the children of undocumented immigrants, they're grown, but they're the children, how that has affected their life. And it's both available on the Independent Lens website, but also on YouTube. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting distribution strategy there from PBS. And then the third is a little, it's homegrown. I want to plug a show called The Jeffersonian, which is a student-produced news magazine that we do here on campus with some help from SOP TV, the local PBS mm-hmm. station. And we come out every year or so, and it's time for to premiere the new one.
Okay.
And it'll be on January 14th at 9 p.m. on PBS.
January 14th on the local PBS
station,
on Southern Oregon Public TV. Okay.
Yep.
Andrew, you're pick 3.
Well, I'm excited that Brooklyn Nine-Nine is returning tonight on television on NBC instead of Fox. So mm-hmm. Reset your DVRs if you need to. another one is actually a good friend of mine was interviewed by you on the Jefferson Exchange. An author named Matt Geiger wrote a book called Astonishing Tales. It's a series of essays and short stories. And an old friend of mine, and my wife got me his book for Christmas. So I'm looking forward to getting into that. And then actually a Walmart ad. There's a Walmart ad that I'm just astonished by that is called Famous Cars. And the amount of licensing, IP licensing that went into that car, that ad. I mean, there's the DeLorean, there's the back, uh-huh. There's the Ghostbusters car, the Jurassic Park car, the Dumb and Dumber car, like so Transformers. Everything is in there, and so it's a pretty amazing ad.
All right, so Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Killing Eve, Waking Dream, Matt Geiger, The Jeffersonian, and Walmart Famous Cars. Chris Lucas and Andrew Gay, thanks so much for joining us for this month's Signals and Noise.